Hello and welcome to the Better Eye Health Podcast with Damon P. Miller II, MD. This episode is a special installment. It is the recording from a talk Dr. Miller gave at the Academy of Integrative Medicine in 2015. The talk focuses on how Grace Halloran, who created the Better Eye Health program, had successful results even before she started using microcurrent stimulation, and then how that changed after she added it in, and what the program looks like today. We hope you enjoy the talk. There is also a YouTube version with slides available as well at our website. And now, the talk.
Well, it's the end of the day, and this is sort of I've got the party favors for everyone. Now that the party's over, people are passing out this form. We wrote a book last year on the work we do with eye disease, and just offering, if you fill that out and give it to me before you go or give me a business card, just write book on it, and we'll send you a copy of it, because I'm going to be talking here about a program, and you have no idea what the program is, so the book describes that. It gives you the history and the science, and we're going to be going over some of that in this talk as well. I just want to thank very much Lee for asking me to come and talk. The other gift in this for all of you is, how many people here, just a quick show of hands, how many people actually see clients? Okay, then I promise you, you are seeing people with macular degeneration. This is a very common disease. And one of the reasons it's so common, it has a genetic underpinnings, we're going to be talking about that, but often this disease doesn't show up until much later in life. And so there's nothing that selects against it. You go through your childbearing years, you're seeing fine. And there's really much more about epigenetics than genetics that's of relevance here, and we're going to talk a little about that, just a little. There are a lot of slides in this talk. The slides are on the website. If you just go to acimconnect.com/downloads, you can get the PDFs. And I did not change the PDF, so what's up here is there. I'm going to go through some of these rather quickly. I'm not just going to read them to you, but I do encourage you to go back and look at it, because there's material I'm not going to really spend much time on here. So one of the things, you know, I've been doing this for a lot of years. I've been doing this almost 20 years, working with eye disease. Grace, who I ended up working with till her death, who developed all of this work, she was doing it since the 80s, and it was really a familial thing that egged her on to develop these studies. But, you know, the current thinking is that there's almost 30 million people in this country with macular degeneration. I've said it's a genetic disease. The good news is there are a whole lot more people with the gene for it who aren't affected. And when you read the data on the CDC website, all they're reporting are the new people who have started getting injections in their eyes. So the people, you know, only 10% of the people develop the bleeding complications, 10 to 15%. And all they're actually reporting are the new people who have started getting injections. So they're missing all the 90% of the people that aren't getting injected and the people with the wet form that aren't. So the current thinking is there's about 30 million people. So a lot of people that need help. And they don't need much help. And that's really the focus of this talk, is that there are a lot of ways to deal with this problem. There is no one way. My way is not the only way. I don't want you to think that. People are working with acupuncture with macular degeneration, and they're having good luck. People are working with ozone, and they're having good luck. People are working with lasers, and they're having good luck. But you don't need lasers. You don't need ozone. People are working with IV nutrition. They're having good luck doing some things to help people. But you don't have to have needle acupuncture. You don't have to have IV injections. Those things are useful. They work, but they're not absolutely necessary. And so what we're really trying to develop is a bare bones program that works, that could hopefully help millions and millions of people. You don't need these expensive therapies. You don't need the Lexus of programs. You don't need weeks at a spa. There are very simple things you can do. So all of the things that you've heard about, all of the things that you do to help someone with a neurodegenerative disease, you can do for macular degeneration, and it will help. And so we're going to kind of try and cover this. So the basic approaches of integrative medicine, they do wonderful things for macular degeneration. You're seeing people, whether you know it or not, you're seeing people with macular degeneration who are or who are at risk for it, and you already have the tools to help them, so please use them. That's the gift you have to offer them. Grace Halloran, she wrote an autobiography. It's out of print, but it's still a great book. Her autobiography, Amazing Grace, it was awarded, given awards by the March of Dimes and by the American Library Association in 2003 as being one of the 10 best books ever about books that describe people pulling themselves out of adversity. Because she was faced with a family, her sisters, her mother, all had this disease. She was losing her sight. It was when she had a son that really lit the fire under her, and she needed to develop something to help her son, because they said, Grace, you were stupid to have a child. Your child's going to be blind by the time he's a teenager. He's got the disease that everybody in your family has, and we can already see it in his eyes. And she drug her son around to 6 different major university eye centers. They all said, Grace, you were stupid to have a child. He has the same disease. He's going to be blind when he's a son. So she goes, well, screw you all. And she set out to try and develop things. And the thing I really want to make an effort to emphasize in what I'm talking about today, she was the one who first discovered using microcurrent stimulation. And you hear a lot about using microcurrent stimulation. I use microcurrent stimulation. I recommend it to everyone I see. But it isn't absolutely necessary. And it's important to understand that in the first 10 years Grace was working with people, she wasn't doing any microcurrent stimulation. She was working with diet, with nutrition, with some color therapy, with acupressure, acupuncture, and she was having great results, turning people around. And when I say turning people around, not just slowing or stopping the disease, people were getting vision back. She got her own driver's license back, and she bought herself a nice red, shiny car, which was just the love of her life. And her son, who was supposed to be blind by the time he was a teenager, he just retired from the Air Force. They don't let you in the Air Force with bad vision. He had such good vision that at his initial physical, when he went in for the Air Force, they said, son, I want you to read the bottom line on that eye chart. And he goes, Union Made. And the little tiny Union Made sticker at the bottom was what he read. And he had better than perfect vision. And he said, I want to be a pilot. And they looked in his eyes and they go, well, you've got pigment changes in your eye. You've got retinitis pigmentosa. We can't let you fly. So he ended up becoming a mechanic. He fixes jet planes. And now that he's retired, he's got a company in Texas where they fly in planes for him to fix from all over the world. So he's still seeing pretty well. But he's still doing this program. This is a lifetime program. And that's the other thing, is that you can't just do a little bit of something and send somebody on their way. You need to teach them how to take care of their own vision, because they're going to need to keep coming back to these therapies for the rest of their life. You know, he was in, had a couple of, while he was in the Air Force, her son had a couple of stints in Iraq. He's got children, he's got a marriage, he's got a life, he's stressed, he's not so good at taking care of his health sometimes. His vision starts to fall off, he gets back on the wagon, he does the therapies, it comes back. And that's the nature of how you deal with this machine. It's a chronic problem, it needs chronic therapy, and it can't be telling somebody they have to run off to a therapist every time something goes wrong. So the whole purpose of this program is to really teach people how to take care of themselves and do that. And I want to, I'll talk a little more about what the microcurrent stimulation did add when she added it. Just some real basics. There are some pictures here. This is just I know you can't see it over there, so I'll point over here. This is just the kind of drusen and changes you see. This is macular degeneration. I just want to emphasize too, macular degeneration is the most common of these, but retinitis pigmentosa, Stargardt disease, cone rod dystrophies, retinaschisis. I mean, all of these retinal dystrophies respond to this program. And as I'm going to show you later, they're all very similar. So, you know, here's what a normal picture looks like. When you've got central vision loss, things start to blur out in the center. The genetics are interesting because these diseases aren't separated by their own unique genetic abnormalities. So there are you can find a person with a problem in a gene that affects ATP production. This is one of the early articles that talks about this. And somebody else may have the same genetic abnormality, but they have Stargardt disease, or the same genetic abnormality, but they have RP. You know, they have a disease where they're losing their peripheral vision, not their central vision. They have no response at all to an electroretinogram, and yet their genetic abnormality is the same as somebody else who's getting degenerative disease at 70 years of age. So these diseases are all much more common than they are different. So keep that in mind too, that it's not just macular degeneration, it's not just RP, and there's a quote in there from that article. Usher syndrome, I forgot to do that. Grace worked with some people with Usher syndrome, I'll tell you that later. Told her son about her son. The first thing she did was just simply, you know, what did she have? She didn't know what to do. She was being told there was nothing you can do. And that's the routine story that happens. This is the story I hear day after day after day. Somebody comes to me, they've gone to see their eye doctor, they're having trouble with their vision. The doctor comes in and goes, I'm so sorry. The problems you're having with your vision, you know, it's not a new pair of glasses that you need. You have macular degeneration. And they pat them on the knee, and they get up and they walk out of the room. And they say, there's nothing that can be done. I'm so, so sorry. And so this is the story that you're hearing, and this is the story that we have to overcome, not just with macular degeneration, but, you know, the people that they trust, the people that they've gone to see, the doctors who were supposed to know are telling them, you can't do anything. There's nothing to be done. You're screwed. I'm sorry. And that's just not true for this or any of these other diseases you've heard about this weekend. There are things that can be done. And it's up to you to tell people how to do them and get them to do them. And in the case of macular degeneration, it's usually pretty simple stuff. So she started with diet. She found some help. Her book describes what led her to discover color therapy. Color therapy is great, especially for RP. And so we do color therapy. She lived next to John Thee, who developed Touch for Health, a kind of acupressure, and put together a whole program of acupressure with him. There are a lot of people out there doing acupuncture, microacupuncture. Dr. Adi, who was in Arkansas, now up in Pennsylvania, people up in Toronto. And yeah, you can go spend thousands of dollars to travel and get treated five times a day and spend thousands and thousands of dollars in acupuncture, and your vision will get better. I'm not telling you it won't. But then 4 months later, you got to go see him again. And 4 months after that, you got to go see him again. And people get tired of traveling all over the place and spending thousands of dollars on hotels and airfare and multiple acupuncture treatments. And the acupressure works every bit as well. And they can do it for themselves. And they can learn to do it, and they can do it for their family. So I started studying acupuncture in 1972. I've worked with the Japanese school, Meiji College in Japan. I've worked with Dr. J.R. Worsley, classical five-element acupuncture. I know acupuncture. I do a lot of acupuncture. If I thought people needed needles, I'd be doing needles. I'd be telling them to go find somebody to do needle acupuncture. And for this, you don't need that. But the things you can do by stimulating the meridians, by stimulating the points, are really important. I'm not saying to ignore that modality, but you can teach people to do it themselves. And I have just a little thing. I can't teach you acupuncture here. I'll come back to that in just a minute. I've got a list in here later just of how you approach it, what kind of points you treat. I just wanted to mention the Usher syndrome. Grace got invited to the Illinois School for the Deaf in 1985. They'd heard about what she was doing. Usher syndrome is simply it's one of the few syndromes that involves these diseases. So they have a retinal dystrophy and they lose their hearing. And she went and worked there. And the therapies that, you know, she did, and all of the students with Ushers had measurable improvement, not just in their vision, but in their hearing. And it was written up in the local papers there, and you can still find those articles online. But all she did acupressure, foot reflexology, biofeedback, massage, and visualization therapy. She didn't do intravenous medications. She didn't do ozone. She didn't do microcurrent stimulation. And all of these kids had improvement in their vision. And she was able to teach them at that school, this is how you do it. And they started doing it with the kids there. And so, and Usher syndrome is, boy, that is a tough problem, let me tell you. Usher syndrome, it's a syndrome that combines problems with hearing, sensory neural hearing loss, and retinal disease that looks a lot like kind of a mix of RP and things. So it's a syndrome. And I say it's the only syndrome. You know, we heard, I guess it was Dr. Lewis who was talking about using the eye as a mirror to the brain. And when we get into the epigenetics of this, there are things, you know, if you have the gene for something and you actually get the disease, there something in your health has had to deteriorate. And so there are cardiovascular things that deteriorate. There are things in your health that have deteriorated. But those are what have affected your epigenetics. That's why the gene is now getting expressed. That's why you're now having problems. You know, just think about macular degeneration, the most common of all of these. You've got a genetic abnormality. If you go looking for a genetic abnormality in anybody with macular degeneration, you will find it. They have it. But you don't have to go screening everybody. But the point is, they had that genetic abnormality at birth. So how do they live to be 60, 70, 80, 90 years old with no problems with their eyes? Because their body was keeping the genes suppressed, and if there was any degeneration, they were regenerating faster than it was degenerating. And so I don't have a treatment that's gonna fix the most complex tissue in the body. I mean, the retinal cells, the neuroepithelial cells in the retina, that's some of the most complex tissue in the entire body. I don't have any way to fix that. But I can support you, I can support people so that they will fix it. Because most of these people, they've been fixing it all their life. You just have to make them a little healthier. A little bit of a program of health that concentrates on things that support the brain and support the eye. So I just want to go here. Dr. Nordenstrom, who, you know, he was a radiologist. So yeah, Gary, that's right. Gary and I are both radiologists by training. He heard about Grace's work. She contacted him, and he was very fascinated with it. And he invited her to come actually visit and talk at the Karolinska Institute, at a talk there, which, boy, did that raise a lot of eyebrows, because she wasn't a doctor. But they did let her talk at a program there in Stockholm, the European Retinitis Pigmentosa Conference in 1985. But when Chernobyl first blew up, the Soviets didn't tell anybody it had blown up for 3 days. And there was a huge cloud of radioactivity headed towards Sweden, and her plane flew straight through that. And she was ICU for 60 days. She lost her thyroid, and it basically, there's a whole diaspora of people exposed to radiation in those early days. A lot of you may still have, the ones that are still alive may still be seeing some of them. It basically ruined her in a way, and it's kind of a testament. She could have easily become a spokesperson of why you don't want nuclear power, but she went on to continue to work with her eyes. But her death, the proximate cause of her death was all the radiation damage and the things that compromised her health after that. But anyhow, she got to know Dr. Nordenstrom. He's a great guy. He's this book, if you can find it now, it's on Amazon, it's like $3,000, but for a used copy. But he was a great guy, and he really encouraged her, and he introduced her to the work, other work that had been done, including in this country, Dr. Becker. So his book, Dr. Becker's book, The Body Electric, I really strongly recommend reading that. He was an orthopedic surgeon in the 70s treating this, and I tore an article out of Science magazine in the 70s where he was cutting legs off rats and using the early forms of microcurrent stimulation to regenerate them. Not just a little bit, regenerate them. And I remember, you know, I wasn't in medical school yet, but I remember thinking, wow, if you can cut the leg off a mammal and grow it back, damn, that's really important. And it is really important. So the this is kind of leading to how we understand a lot of the work that happens with regenerating the nervous system. It's about adult stem cells. And yes, they don't work, as you know, Dr. Steenblok pointed out, they don't work as well when you get older, but they haven't stopped working, and there are things you can do to support them. Anything that you do, and anything that happens in your body that involves regeneration, I don't care if you cut yourself shaving and it grows back and it looks like skin again, that involves adult stem cells. Every bit of regeneration that happens, whether you've damaged your liver from cirrhosis or you had a heart attack and part of it regrows, your brain damage is damaged and it regrows, we're talking about supporting adult stem cells. And Becker, he kind of understood that. He didn't know how exactly things were working. But again, there's a lot of slides here. I'm just not going to read the whole thing. But where microcurrent stimulation has its greatest use now is the orthopedists use it for non-union fractures, for healing tendon ligamentous injuries. You know, when you see a football quarterback injured and he's being hauled off the field, if you're paying attention, he's got a little box and he's hooked up to microcurrent stimulation before they ever get him off the field. And the reason that the quarterback's back playing in 2 weeks now instead of six or eight the way it used to be is because it dramatically accelerates healing and regeneration. And so there was a parallel technology that was developed in the Soviet Union. I can send you that paper if you want. They were also working with the eye, but they were mostly working with optic nerve disorders. In this country, most of the work with microcurrent stimulation was with retinal disease. In the Soviet Union, most of it was with optic nerve disorders, and they had great luck. Traumatic damage, damage from glaucoma, all kinds of things. But it's just another body of work. But Nordenstrom, even though he was a radiologist, he did very elegant work describing how the body creates and maintains currents in the body and the importance of those currents. And that often when there's not adequate healing going on, it's because the currents have been diminished or blocked or inhibited. And so the application of current and microcurrent stimulation is only one way of doing it. PEMF is doing the same thing. You're inducing current flow in tissues that are not having normal current flows. And it leads to some remarkable things. So this is just some of the diagrams. He did things. He was showing Carilion photography. That's just the normal currents in the body that generate these images you see, you know, the kind of halos around normal tissue. And even, this is a nice one, because even after a leaf has fallen off the tree and has turned yellow, there's still enough metabolic activity going on in the leaf to be generating these currents. And you're simply demonstrating those currents with Carilion photography. So that's why, you know, dead bodies grow hair and toenails and all this kind of stuff for months and months. And again, this is just some of the work. This is all this stuff is in Becker's book. He originally had this idea. He was doing the surgical thing. He'd amputate the limb. He'd bring the sciatic nerve up and he'd implant it in the skin. So that was where the electrical stimulation was coming from early in his work. In Becker's work. But then what would happen is it would start to regrow, and it would grow away a couple of millimeters from where that nerve was implanted, and the regeneration would stop. And so what he did was he started measuring what is the nature of the electrical stimulation coming from this nerve, and he developed equipment that would duplicate that. So that's all microcurrent stimulation is. It's trying to duplicate the physiologic currents that exist in the body naturally, and applying those to make up for deficiencies in these currents. And again, those currents, what do? They restore the intracellular, extracellular membrane potential. So by restoring that, and that potential is important because, and I think Dr. Cowden mentioned that it's not a sodium-potassium pump. It's a, there's a electron carrier, a redox process that's going on. It isn't so much a sodium-potassium pump, but there are mechanisms that maintain that intracellular, extracellular membrane potential. And the reason that's important is 90% of the metabolic activity of a cell occurs at the cell membrane, and it's driven by that potential. It's like it's the battery that drives, it's the current, the gasoline that drives most of the metabolic processes in the cell at the level of the cell membrane. And so, you know, you're just trying to restore that with microcurrent stimulation. So what did microcurrent stimulation add? Well, what it did add was things happened faster. When for the first 10 years, she was working with microcurrent stimulation, but machines were $30,000. So there are some rich people in Hollywood who are still using the machines they got back in the 80s from her, but or through with her help. But, you know, you can't, a $30,000 machine isn't going to really be for everybody. And the but what she saw in the people she was working with is a couple of things. One, it made things happen faster. People like that. People like things to happen faster. And it made the whole program much more forgiving. So the people who were getting great results without using microcurrent stimulation, they were dedicated people. They were diligent. They were doing everything she was telling them to do, and they were doing it every day, and they were doing it just like she showed them to do it. And if you did that, you got great results. She was, you know, 90% of the people she was working with were getting real improvements in their vision. I'm talking 2, 3, 4, 5 lines of improvement on an eye chart, getting their driver's license back, seeing in the dark again. People with RP, their neuroretinograms, the electroretinograms normalized. We're talking measurable, objective, real improvement. But the people who were a little sloppy with it, they weren't getting very good improvement. So now with microcurrent stimulation and the other things that she was doing, you could miss a day. You could not do it perfectly, and you were still getting improvement. So it made it a much more forgiving program. And she met Dr. Joel Rosen. He just died a couple years ago, unfortunately. He was a good friend of mine. And he helped develop a protocol. He also developed a portable unit, and that's the unit we're still using. Dr. Kondrat, who he came to one of the conferences Grace and I did in 1998. He got real excited. He wrote a book, Miracle Eye Cure, in 1999. I helped him write that. And it just talked about the microcurrent stimulation. But we're still using that unit, and it's still helping 90% of the people we work with. So, you know, I guess that's a whole nother discussion, but the you want to look at anything like this, you want to look at outcomes. You want the people you're working with to have a good outcome. You want them to get better. And this program that we're showing you here, it works. It helps people get better. The machine we're using, it works. It helps people get better. And nobody's found anything to add to what we're doing that's made it any better. You can add things and it makes it more complex, makes it more expensive, makes it more difficult, makes it something you can't do for yourself, but it hasn't changed the outcomes by a percentage point. Everybody who's doing this, the numbers they're reporting are the same as Grace was getting in the 1980s. So, and Grace did, she did do a paper, and I'm going to submit this for the journal. She wrote with an ophthalmologist in San Francisco, Dr. August Reeder. She did a very carefully controlled study looking at the outcomes, and nobody, no ophthalmology journal would even look at it because one of the primary authors wasn't an MD. Not only were they not an MD, they weren't an ophthalmologist. They wouldn't, they just returned them. Said, we don't look at papers that aren't by ophthalmologists. So, but we've got that paper on the website. Oh, let's see, what am I doing? I'm touching stuff here. So this is just, these are some things again in the slides. This is before and after, before and after. If you know what a visual field test is, these are people, and this is after just a couple of weeks. You know, that's the visual field before and after, before and after. That's just one way of measuring it. This one's even more dramatic. You know, before, pretty much global loss of visual function. Here, much improved loss of visual function. Again, this study was just after a few weeks of treatment. You don't need a long time. This was from the data from our first 120 patients, 121 patients, and this is the total total thing. We were treating a whole lot of different conditions here, but 85%, something like that, 83, showed improvement. And improvement, this was measuring acuity, two lines or better, but if you look up here, you know, 20-some percent getting four lines or better, 30-some percent getting three lines or better. So, and you know, what's, so two lines, three lines, what's that mean? Well, that's the difference between passing a driver's test or not passing a driver's test. That's the difference between being able to see a face or not see a face, difference between being able to read or not read. So, you know, improvement in acuity of a couple of lines or more on a visual acuity test is huge if you're right at that margin where, you know, you barely have vision or you don't. So this means a lot to people. People really appreciate this. And again, this is just, you know, before, after. This is just looking with newer stuff, OCT. So here you're looking at the before picture, kind of a really scattered thing here, a lot of red down there. And after a few weeks, much improvement in the thing. It's almost all completely green over here, meaning within normal. And that's measuring thickness. The importance of this is measuring thickness of the retina. So within a few weeks, they're actually showing improvements in thickness of the retina. So we have indirect evidence that people are getting regeneration. You know, we could have called this talk Regeneration Happens. I should buy that URL. But they're getting regeneration of the tissue in their retina. This is showing improvements in the thickness of the retina. The indirect evidence is just the improvement in the function. One of the things that happens, you know, the ophthalmologists are a little, it's a little, actually a little primitive the way these diagnoses are made. It's, you know, how things look is how things get named. And so somebody comes in and they've got a tear in their retina or a buckle or a hole or things like this, and they're told they have it. And the CDC considers a retinal tear and a retinal hole as two distinct diagnoses. Or no, your retina's falling apart. You know, things are just looking bad. And these things normalize. You know, and the ophthalmologists want to do surgery, and I say, well, hold off a bit, let's do this. And, you know, the holes fill in, the tear's correct, the buckle's correct. So those are other, that's other evidence we have that there's actually regeneration going on here. Just adding ACS, Grace, Leland Michael, he was up in North Dakota. He worked with Dr. Kondrat. And again, they tried to develop, I think they went bankrupt. Well, Leland died, but Kondrat and some other people, they tried to develop their own unit, and they just sold it. So you're going to be seeing another unit come on the market. They just went about bankrupt trying to develop a new unit. And I'd talk to him. I go, well, why do you want to develop a new unit? We got a fine unit. You know, you use the unit that's here. But there's, you know, it's when you got 30 million people, it begins to look like a really ripe market. You know, you want to cash in on that. Sam Sneed, as much as his family denies that it did anything, it was all over the papers in North Carolina, and I mean in North Dakota, South Dakota, because he went up there and he got his vision back, and he didn't want to come to California. I spoke to him, and his manager decided to go up there, but you know, he went from a 20/100 to 20/30 after treatment for just a week or two, and
working with Dr. Jarding. And so, you know, microcurrent stimulation, it's not necessary or sufficient. There was one manufacturer who, somebody who wasn't a physician, who wasn't a clinician, they also, but they were an engineer and they kind of back-engineered a machine. And their data is great because it shows that if all you do is microcurrent stimulation, you get barely better than placebo. They treated a number of people and just didn't see people getting much better. And then this is the 90% lasting success rate achieved by Grace with hers. So you got to do more than microcurrent. And people, you know, the two, I tell people that the two biggest, these are the two biggest mistakes you can make in medicine as you're looking at your healthcare. Number one, you can look for a magic bullet. You can think there's some magic bullet. If I just find the one supplement, that drug, that doc with some procedure, that thing that's going to help me. And then the other mistake you make is I want somebody to do it to me. I want somebody to do it for me. I don't want to have to do anything. And I tell them, you know, if that's the way you think, you're making the two most critical mistakes that are going to keep you from getting better. And so people love micro, they hear about doing this stuff for your eye, but then they, oh, microcurrent stimulation, great, get me a machine. And then it doesn't work, and they go, well, it doesn't work. You know, it didn't work. It didn't do it for me. But it does help if it's part of a complete program of eye health. And when I say a complete program of eye health, I passed out there's a handout here. We wrote a book. Fill it out, give it back to me, give me your business card with the word book on it or something. I'll send you a copy because you'll know what the program is. But it's simple stuff. It's stuff that you can teach people to do. They can do it for themselves and it will work. And that's the only way we're going to treat 30 million people is doing this. So just, Oh, thank you. You did read it. I know that from the comments you made on it. Yeah, thank you. And I think, you know, that's the point I started out with. You, whether you think you're going to be involved in treating eye disease, you may never have thought that, but believe me, if you're seeing people, you've got people who need help. People who are being written off, being told that there's nothing that can be done. And if you don't have vision, you don't have freedom, you don't have autonomy, you don't have the things it takes to get old and have a happy old age. And so, it's one of the best things you can do for people is to help them maintain their eyesight. And I have my way of doing it. If you have other kinds of clinical things you do what you know, do what you do, do something. But don't just leave these people to languish. Don't ignore their eyes. Which microcurrent unit, like I said, this was the patent on the machine that Joel Rossin did. We're using a newer version of this, but this unit has been a workhorse. It's durable, it lasts forever, and it still works. And with all of the advances in microcurrent stimulation, nobody has found a unit that does any better. No one has a unit that does any better. There are units that cost more, units that are more difficult to teach people to use, units that need a lot of programming. But do this, and we did find the manufacturer of this unit is still in manufacture. If you are a practitioner and you buy, you know, units in some quantity, they're under $300 a piece. So, you know, you can get these units quite inexpensively for your clients. And your job is to teach them how to use it, maybe help them get the supplements that are right, the other things for their health. And I just to go here briefly, the whole thing, frequencies are not as important as they're made out to be. The most important thing is the consistency of the current. In all the research on microcurrent stimulation here and in Europe, having a machine that puts out a constant frequency, I mean a constant current. And that's hard to do when you're dealing with biological tissues because just the very nature of treating the tissue changes its resistance, changes its conductance, and you have to be adjusting that frequency constantly. So this unit adjusts it a few thousand times per second. So you get a very steady, nice, steady current. And what we do today, this is just a list, we do microcurrent stimulation, the supplements, color therapy, eye health exercises, AccuEye points, that's the acupressure. Working now much more, you know, since I was working with Grace, we do much more now with dealing with a diet, as Dr. Cowan would say, the appropriate diet for you. So eliminating foods you're sensitive to, a diet appropriate for your metabolic type, stress management, really critical, detoxification, that's the newest thing we're going to do. We took Dr. Cowden's book and we've put together a course we're going to start in a couple of months, which basically, you know, when I just hand your book to people, they go, "Oh, where do I start?" And it's a little overwhelming. And so the course is just basically to say, you know, here's how you start. This is just do these things and get started with it, and then you'll have the book and you can do more. And then ongoing support. And, you know, so we do the microcurrent stimulation. There's the color lamp we use. We developed that ourselves because the one from Syntonix was a couple thousand and this is a couple hundred. We do eye health exercises. Those are in the handout, so you can see the exercises we do. The AccuEye points, here's how we approach the AccuEye points. So we're doing local eye points, lymphatic points, working with liver and gallbladder points, hand and foot points. These are really critical. Most of the microacupuncture that Dr. Adi started and brought over here from Denmark is using these hand and foot points, but you can work them just with pressure. Ear and scalp points, Japanese meridian techniques. So it looks a little overwhelming, but it's not, because a lot of it is you kind of assess where are the tender points, you know, where do you need to go. And then stress management, we do a combination of breathing, meditation, visualization, recall healing. The kind of fundamental thing we find in recall healing is what was so painful that you don't want to look at it. That's the kind of thing that, that's where the conversation begins. And it's amazing, you know, you take somebody with central vision, you know, what was right in front of you that you didn't want to look at, and this whole story just kind of comes flowing out. Sometimes you have to go a little further, but no one's ever asked them that question before. What was so difficult in your life that you didn't want to look at it? So I just encourage you to go there. And then, of course, basic healthcare, you know, aerobic exercise, no smoking, little alcohol, forgiveness, finding a sense of purpose, methylation support, alkalinization, customized nutrition, you know, just the basics, the things you would do with anybody, you do with people with eye disease. And it's just a part of making them healthy. And I just want to say real briefly here, how can the retina regenerate? So if you've never heard of green fluorescent protein, these three people got the Nobel Prize for it. It was a research tool that was developed for studying adult stem cells. And so what you do is you do a combination of some genes from a fluorescent jellyfish, and you put them in a mouse or a rat stem cell. And the mice then become fluorescent. Cute picture. But the idea is that, you know, so I said stem cells are involved in any regeneration, any healing that's going, but the problem is there are markers on the surface of a stem cell that under a microscope just looks like a white cell, like a neutrophil, but they've got markers on the surface. So you can take and label circulating stem cells in the blood and you can say, oh, that's a stem cell. But what that stem cell does is it goes to an area of inflammation. So that's one of the good things about inflammation. It signals, it says to the stem cells, hey, over here, this is where we need it. So the stem cells are going around sniffing out where is the inflammation, and that's where they go. And they merge with the cell that's damaged. They decide what the nature of the tissue is that they're trying to regenerate, and they contribute to the regeneration of that particular cell line, that particular tissue. So, you know, there's a couple things in what I just said. If you've got systemic inflammation, you know, they're going around sniffing for where to go, and everywhere they go, they sniff inflammation. So that inflammation impairs the functioning of the adult stem cells. So all of this stuff we're doing, you know, you've got to be taking care of that. But these are just pictures from, it's hard to see over here, I'm sorry, but again, well, you can kind of get a sense. So all of these fluorescent things are different tissues that have been damaged in animals that have labeled stem cells, and you can see that the regenerated tissue is fluorescent, proof that the stem cells were engaged in the regeneration. And this is skin, there's just a muscle cell, there's a brain cell, and these are all pictures of retinal cells that have been damaged, and usually the damage is either by radiation, by ischemia, or by damaging the artery to the retina. So these are the animal models. It's not that I'm big on animal research, but it does show that, you know, when I was in, it wasn't that long ago. I mean, lose my hair and I'm not the youngest guy in the room, but when I was in medical school, I was told the brain doesn't regenerate. The eye doesn't regenerate. You know, back in the 80s, that was what I was taught in medical school. These cells, you've got them, you lose them, it's too bad. You're never going to regenerate them. And now we know that, you know, you probably don't have a cell in your body, bone, brain, anything else that's more than 10 years old. These things are constantly regenerating. And you can support that system of regeneration if you've got a degenerative disease. And the last thing here, just epigenetics, the hottest word in medicine. And again, you know, really the most important thing, just because you have a gene for a disease doesn't mean you will get the disease. And it's too much for me to talk about all the things that affect epigenetics, but pay attention to it. And just remember this, people, you know, I don't tell people to go get genetic testing because it just puts fear in them. You know, oh my God, I've got the gene for breast cancer. I've got the gene for diabetes. I've got the gene for Alzheimer's disease. And I go, well, yeah, but that gene is just a gene. It doesn't mean you're going to get that disease. So that's just about the end of it. Mitochondrial health. This is the final thing. I wish Dan Clark were still here. Dan Clark wrote a paper called The Mitochondria. It's a 400-page PDF that kind of fell off the internet for a while. It's hard to find. So we put it back up. You just go to themitochondria.com. It's a little out of date, but it's a searchable PDF. So a lot of the stuff that might be done now to work with the mitochondria isn't in this paper. But if you want to go look at what does our lipoic acid do, what do different supplements do, what's understood about how the mitochondria degenerates and regenerates, it's just a useful resource, a searchable PDF. You just go there and you just enter your email and it'll send you a link and you download it. So thank you, Dr. Clark, for that. And just the final thing I just want to say, and I just want to plant this as a seed, because this is the kind of stuff I'm thinking about. You know, the mitochondria regenerate their telomeres every generation. The mitochondria don't get reduced down to a blueprint that then gets rebuilt. You know, you actually, in the stem cells for your sperm and for your egg are a few mitochondria, mostly from the mother, you know, a few from the father. But those mitochondria, when the new baby is born, they all have normal length telomeres. And yet they're hundreds of thousands of years old. And so how do they do that? How do they do that? I don't know how they do that. How do they go from being the telomere from an aging person, the genetics from an aging person with shortened telomeres, and there's something miraculous in the formation of a new embryo that they just regenerate. And now you've got mitochondria that are fully young again. So, and I just offer that because it's sort of the best proof there is that things can regenerate. Regeneration happens. And even though we don't understand how it happens, there are all these models that things that we thought were irreparable, uncurable, they can regenerate. We're just beginning to get an idea of how it happens. How do you support it? But there's all kinds of proof out there that it happens. So that's really, you know, I don't have all the proof about why my program works. All I know is I treat people and their vision gets better. And I'm doing it pretty simply. And you can do it pretty simply. And so, if you want to know more, just give me a call. My email's up there. And there's also just some, just try it, you know. There's no one right way. And then there's some references at the end. You can find those on the thing. So that's all I have to say.
Questions, comments? I've never thought about the fact that the mitochondria telomeres don't shrink down like ours did.
Well, they do shrink down, but then they come back.
No, that's what I'm saying. They keep coming back, keep regenerating.
Yeah.
Amazing.
This is just a comment. I would like to make
yes.
a comment that while in Moscow, one of the institutes we worked very closely was the Fyodor I Institute, which is the of the five famous institutes, you know, very famous, because Professor Fyodorov was initially PhD in physics, you know, and got into medicine and looked at the eye like a physical object. And he was the one who taught, even including American ophthalmologists, about the radial orthokeratotomy, you know, and stuff like that.
No, say that again.
Oh, sorry. And I would like to say that our work with him led to some very progressive results. One of them was to prove that actually macrodegeneration is another indication for fetal, you know, cell transplantation. I work in.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
It was a wonderful talk. I had gotten exposed to eye issues, not because of my practice, but because I had a head-on collision in an old Cadillac with no airbags. So it caused vitreous detachment in both eyes. And the ophthalmologist said, you know, that's forever damage. But I just walked out and I thought, my God, he's so stupid. You know, he just doesn't know my God, that's for sure. And so I went back and I just prayed about it, and I thought, you know, there's some simple things that could probably be done. And I didn't know about the micro device that you had, but I used a PFG 2Z, right? PFG 2Z. You're not supposed to put it on your face, but I was a little bit desperate, so I put the pads on my face, and I turned up the a couple of frequencies for eye health. And a friend had given me some patches that supposedly produce glutathione, and so I would put on a mask and put these things right over that, and my vision is better than it was before because I worked so hard on it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And doing some of those exercises are just fantastic. I'm really glad to see you put those up. My question is that have you done much to look at the effects of glutathione by any means with some of the eye diseases that you've worked with?
Yes and no. I haven't done any real careful study of it. But, you know, one of the things that, you know, I didn't really talk about, but one of the things that happens, the field that you're treating when you're doing microcurrent stimulation decreases inflammation, improves blood flow, leads to detoxification. So even though you're not doing a total body thing, you are doing that. So the glutathione patches over the eye was brilliant because you're going to get a detox there, and you need to support the body and the tissue that's detoxing the same way you would anything else you're doing. Most of the people I work with are at a distance because I'm doing a program that doesn't require them to come see me. And so, you know, people in 50 states and 27 countries, a lot of them I've never laid eyes on. But the people who are local, I'm working them up. I'm doing detoxification with them. I'm doing support for phase one and phase two detoxification. I use a lot of glutathione. I'm just using, I'm kind of, you know, a little stupid about this. And so Dr. Cowden a long time ago said, well, just try sublingual glutathione, and tried sublingual glutathione. I just get reduced L-glutathione and have them take it sublingually twice a day. And, you know, I measured some glutathione levels in people and it seemed like, well, it seems to be working. And again, it's just, that's my focus isn't to bring people in and do IV therapies on them. My focus is to give people the power to take care of themselves. And so if I can give them a little bottle of IV glutathione reduced glutathione, and they can go home and use it themselves and get great results, you know, but that's...
Yeah, I love that IV, the sublingual glutathione. The other thing that we...
Tastes terrible, so you need...
Oh, it's horrible, but they'll use it if they're desperate, right? The other thing that we started doing with vision issues is to check their allergy stress response to whatever they're eating on it. You know, they start eating redundantly. And Dr. Cowden had told us to start doing the breathing exercises, you know, synchronized to your pulse rate 5 minutes before you eat and all that sort of thing, and then start cycling your food. And we found a lot of their vision issues would diminish dramatically.
Yeah, well, I think, immune issues are... I've got more and more people now that are showing eye issues and evidence of some kind of autoimmunity, retinal edema. And so it's become, just in the time I've been doing it, it's more of a problem. And that's why we have more and more work now with nutrition. Because, you know, I keep telling people, you know, it's not that foods have caused your problem. Maybe they do. But food is something you have total control over. So if you can get rid of the gluten, get rid of the casein, get rid of the foods that you might be uniquely sensitive to, it isn't that that caused your problem, but if you do that and do it diligently, you're going to do a lot to remove one of the things that's stressing your immune system and causing the allergic and immune responses. And so,
glutathione sublingually tastes kind of like you expect to, if you sucked on your socks after you worn them for a couple of days.
You come to like it, though, after a while.
You can't replace the glutathione for that technique, though.
Okay. Socks don't work as well.
Okay. Have you had any experience with hyaluronic acid, taking that orally to change the eye health?
I have not.
Okay.
And again, like I say, what I'm proposing isn't the only way to do it. It's not the definitive list of everything that works or helps. You know, I've just found that this is what we do and it works, and, you know, and I haven't looked at I know hyaluronic acid. I used to use it a lot as a radiologist.
I guess my question is, on your top nutrients for your eye health, what would be on your top three nutrients that you would recommend for eye repair for a detached retina?
For a detached retina? Well, I mean, They need the building blocks that are necessary for those tissues to rebuild themselves. So lutein is one, the DHA, the omega-3 fatty acid. You know, 50% of the weight of the brain is fats, and 50% of those fats are DHA mostly. So 25% of the weight of your brain is DHA, and your eye is just your brain. It's not some organ that wired itself into the brain. It's just specialized brain tissue. That's what, you know, the eye is the window to the brain because it is the brain. And so DHA, taurine, I use that. And if they're using microcurrent stimulation, I have them take a product. Right now, the one that's on the market that I'm using is something, it's an algae extract that increases circulating levels of stem cells. That, and then I also work with herbs, whatever's needed for their digestive health, and then mineral supplements, even more so than vitamins.
Thank you. Yeah. Great talk.
Thank you.
As far as that hyaluronic acid, vitamin C is a very good stimulant for the production of hyaluronic acid in the body, as well as collagen.
Did I miss the name of the machine that you're using?
No, this is a CME talk, so I didn't
see. I kept waiting for it. But.
Oh, doing the question and answer. It's a MicroStim is the company. MicroStim.
American company?
Or? Yeah. Well, I mean, nothing is made in America anymore. The company's American, but the units are made in Taiwan.
Okay, cool. MicroStim.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think they're it's MicroStim.com.
What is your recommendation for looking at your smartphone, computer screen, high-definition TV in the evening?
You mean, what do I recommend about that?
Well, it's blue light.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on it?
Well, the lutein is real important. You know, one of the things that is, you know, if you're looking even more so than the earliest sign for something like macular degeneration isn't the drusen as much as it is just kind of diffuse pigment loss. And those pigments, which are rebuilt if you take something like a good quality lutein, those are a natural set of sunglasses. So, you know, my approach with that kind of thing is I advise people that these things aren't so good for you. But if you're doing this and your vision, if you're noticing an ill effect from it, or if you can give it up for a few weeks and you see some improvement, then you know for you, that thing is not good. So I try not to give blanket recommendations and, you know, give, you know, blanket damnation to things. But usually if you can get people to play around with things, it becomes pretty evident to them if it's real for them or not. So, you know, that's how I handle my...
Thank you. I don't know how easy it is to use a computer with it because I haven't tried, but there's some glasses called blue blockers that theoretically you could put on at night if you're going to continue to operate your computer after sundown.
Yeah, they're just kind of yellow.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Great job. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Better Eye Health Podcast with Damon P. Miller II, MD. Tune in for more installments at BetterEyeHealth.com. Have a great day.